Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we learn a bit about early Tulsa history. While Tulsa is not mentioned in Bobby Troup's classic song Route 66, we Tulsans know that Route 66 would never have become the romanticized icon of the open road without Tulsan Cyrus Avery. Around here, he's often referred to as the founder of Route 66. The story's a little more complicated than that, but there's no doubt that Route 66 exists as we know it, thanks to Cy Avery. Writer Susan Croce Kelly tells the story of Avery in her book, Father of Route 66, The Story of Cy Avery. It's published by the University of Oklahoma Press. Avery did a lot more than just help create Route 66. He was a leader in the good roads movements in the early 20th century. As a county commissioner in Tulsa and a state highway commissioner, he built hundreds of miles of the state and city's first paved roads. He led the effort to build the first free bridge over the Arkansas River, took on the Klan both in the state and here in Tulsa after the race riot, and spearheaded what he considered to be his greatest achievement, the construction of Spavinaw Dam and bringing fresh water to Tulsa. Missouri writer Susan Croce Kelly is the author of Route 66, The Highway and Its People. She'll be signing her latest book, Father of Route 66, this Saturday at 10:30 at the Tulsa Historical Society and Museum at 2445 South Peoria. The event's free to the public. I began by asking the Missouri writer what interested her in the story of Cy Avery.
Back when I wrote my first book, Route 66, The Highway and Its People, which is really a history of the highway in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s before the interstates, I traveled with a photographer. And when we got to Oklahoma, people started to tell us Cy Avery invented Route 66. Now, that's a funny word for a highway. He invented it. And we got curious and managed to meet his son and daughter-in-law, who told us a little bit about the story. And then we were in, I think it's Weatherford, where the Route 66 Museum is now.
Mm-hmm. One of them.
And met a woman whose husband had been part of the Route 66 Association in the 40s and 50s. And they basically told us the story of Cy, which is he was on a national committee to take the muddy roads in this country, and as the states paved them, to make sure that the main pavements in each state connected. I mean, it wouldn't do a lot of good if Oklahoma paved a road to the Missouri border and Missouri paved a road to the Oklahoma border and they didn't meet. And there was no law that suggested that they should. So Cy was on a committee to lay out the national highway system from the existing roads, that would be the roads that would be paved and would be the national roads. And then he was on a committee of five men who gave numbers to the roads. And therein lies the big Cy Avery story.
Right.
But anyway, we learned about Cy, and he was in my book, but I always thought he would make a wonderful subject for a novel. I've tried my hand, and that wasn't a good idea. But a few years ago, I was looking for a project, and I thought, I wonder if anybody's ever written a biography of Cy Avery. And fortunately, I found that his papers were in Tulsa. I called the librarian, and she said, to her knowledge, nobody had written a book about Cy. And did I want to speak to Cy's granddaughter? And I met Joy Avery on the phone that day. And they were enthusiastic, and I was enthusiastic, and went from there.
You mentioned people told you that Cyrus Avery invented Route 66. Now, I would assume the story is far more complicated. But it seems to me he's pretty much responsible for Route 66 going through Oklahoma.
He is. And the big story, the fun story, is I said he was on this national committee. There's a National Association of State Highway Officials with officials from all the 48 states back. It was started in 1914. It's where they could get together and talk about road projects and things that needed to be done without having to get the public involved. And they began to worry about the fact that they were going to have paved roads that might not connect. And the Secretary of Agriculture appointed Cy to a joint board of the state highway officials to take the existing roads and put together a national map. Then Cy and a man from Missouri named Pipemeyer, who was a state engineer here, were appointed to a five-man committee to give the highways numbers. The idea, this gets down in the weeds, but I think it's fascinating.
No, I think it is. I couldn't believe all the controversy over the numbering of the highways.
Right. Well, the idea was that the major north-south highways, which would go from Canada to Mexico, would be in number one or number five. And if you think about it now, you've got Highway 1 on the East Coast and Highway 101 on the West Coast.
Right.
And then the East-West highways, because there would be fewer of them, would end in 0, 10, 20, 30, 40, and so forth.
That's right.
And if you looked at the map, when they drew it, you could see the grid of national highways except for this one screwball highway that went to Tulsa and then Springfield, Missouri, and then Chicago and stopped. And when the Committee of Five got done with a numbering system, they had given number 60 to that highway, which did not go cross-country, north-south, or east-west. And at their national meeting, the American Association of State Highway Officials voted to approve the map and approve the numbering, and also, incidentally, to approve a system of highway signs, stop signs, railroad signs, yield signs, and the traffic, the highway shield.
Yeah, the highway shield. Which
there
is,
were no road signs either,
right,
which caused people to get lost.
But anyway, getting back to this controversy.
The highway officials approved this whole system, and then they sent it to the states for endorsement. And the governor of Kentucky looked at the map, and he said, wait, Highway 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50 go north of Kentucky, and Highways 70, 80, and 90 go south of Kentucky. Kentucky has been overlooked. And what is this Highway 60 that goes to Chicago? That must have been the mob that did that.
Well, anyway, this governor from Kentucky makes a horrible stink about it, and so it ends up he ends up getting Highway 60, which, you know, it goes through Oklahoma, it goes through Kentucky today, and so they came up originally they were going to name Route 66 62.
Well, the federal highway people kind of thought that the governor of Kentucky had a point, and they kept suggesting, maybe you could have 62, Mr. Avery, and the governor of Kentucky could have 60. And Mr. Avery said no. And then they said, well, how about 60 north and 60 east? And everybody said no. And what finally happened was Cy got a letter from one of the honchos at the Bureau of Public Roads that said, you know, Congress is beginning to get involved in this. And if Congress gets involved, we're not going to get a national highway system. So nothing has changed much.
Exactly.
And so they had a meeting in Springfield, the state highway engineer in Missouri, and Cy, and the state highway engineer from Oklahoma, whose name was John Page. And they talked about it. Cy said, okay, what numbers haven't been used for the major highways? 66 was one of them.
And out of that, you know, the romance of 66, it has to do a lot with the number itself, don't you think?
I think the number was significant. I couldn't find any mention of that, but it's a great graphic number mm-hmm. for design-wise. And the 20s, people were into the occult and numerology and things like that, and 66 is a number that means riches, I think, and mm-hmm. long life or something, but it's a real positive number from that perspective as well. And it trills off the tongue really nicely.
Right. And obviously worked for Bobby Troop.
That's right. That's right.
And that's the story of Route 66, but this book's really more than Route 66, because if you had a chance to speak with Cyrus Avery, even today we remember him for Route 66, he would say his biggest accomplishment was getting Spavinaw water to Tulsa.
Yes. I had gone through his papers, and that was a conclusion I came to, and I asked his grandchildren, besides Joy, who I mentioned, his namesake, Stevens Avery, is also in Tulsa right now, and they both said that. They weren't even aware of his interest in highways as kids, but they knew about Spavinaw water. That was important.
And anybody who lives in Tulsa knows how important this was, because we did not have good water. And you also tell the story of early Tulsa, which, in an era where you expect government to do things, really was private citizens doing it. You needed a bridge across the river to the Red Fork oil fields. It's a private citizen who puts up a toll bridge, a group of private citizens. It's private citizens that sort of spearhead this bond issue to get Spavinaw water here. In fact, Cy Avery, he's not really holding any office, but he ends up becoming the man that gets all the right-of-way for the pipeline to come from Spavinaw. And it's the same thing on highways, too. It was a group of private citizens really pushing to have better roads, good water, all of these things to create a interconnected infrastructure of a country.
That's right. That's right. But I was fascinated with the city of Tulsa. I mean, it helped that the oil was all right there. But the way that the old commercial club and then the Chamber of Commerce just took things in hand, said, okay, guys, let's get with it. It makes really interesting reading for a historian. Another thing that was done that way was the airport.
Yeah.
There was an air show that came into town, and Charles Lindbergh, I think. And Lindbergh said, hey, Tulsa's great, and the airport I landed at is great, but this city needs to have a municipal airport. And I think by that evening, Cy and
William Skelly, yeah.
Yeah, had gotten together a group of men, and they said, okay, we'll have an airport by this time next year. And they did.
Well, you've gotten into the early origins of the Tulsa Chamber of Commerce. That's the Tulsa Commercial Club.
Yes.
And, you know, anybody who's studied Tulsa history, I've been fascinated by that whole commercial club and later the chamber, their boosterism in getting people to come to Tulsa. I mean, they would hire a train, send it all over the country, just espousing. It was basically like buying television ads today, but they were doing it on a train and hitting every whistle stop in the East.
Right, and that first train that they sent out, they even hired a cowboy who did rope tricks.
Yeah.
Who was Will Rogers.
Right.
But the sense that the citizens of Tulsa had that this was going to be a great city was just amazing, and it must have been catching.
Now, how did Cy Avery decide to settle in Tulsa? Because he'd lived in Indian Territory, outside of Indian Territory, prior to statehood. What attracted him to Tulsa in the first place?
You know, I don't know for sure. His papers don't include a lot of personal letters, but he married and brought his bride to Oklahoma City, where he was in the insurance business. And then not long after that, he moved to Vineta, which was the oldest established city in eastern Oklahoma, I think the first one to get electricity, and was doing farm loans and insurance, and then he began to do oil leasing. And I think from what I could tell, Tulsa had a better game going, and he wanted to be part of it. So he moved just a couple months before statehood. He brought his family to Tulsa, and the first Tulsa booster train went out before Cy got there, but he was on the second one to promote the city.
Now, it's really interesting, as you were writing about how he established himself, he was considered one of the movers and shakers of the community, but he didn't do it through his fortune, although he did have some money at some points, not after the Depression as much, but up until the Depression, he was well off, but he was not in the league with the real oil-rich people of the community, yet he was sort of arm-in-arm with most of those folks.
I think, you know, he was in real estate, he was in insurance, he was, I think, pretty early on the board of one of the banks. So he was a player, and he was one of the people that got things done. And he joined the commercial club after he'd been in Tulsa for a while. But I found a report in the minutes of the old commercial club the first time he gave his fledgling speech. And it was about, of all things, dairy cows and the value of good dairy operations to the future of Northeast Oklahoma. And the fellow that wrote up the account said you could see the cows. You could hear them mooing. And I think he was just a golden-tongued orator.
Well, you know, you have a lot of quotes by him in the book. And you know, he's homespun wisdom. I think he was describing one of his ousters from the Highway Commission and says, well, as soon as that guy, or the WPA, I think later, as soon as that guy went, I went the way of the wangdoodle. And so the quotes you have suggest a real homespun orator who could really capture somebody's imagination, which really struck me as ironic, because when you read through the book, he obviously accomplished a lot of things, but he made an awful lot of powerful enemies. The Klan, which is something it was interesting to see that he was very much anti-Klan. He advocated for African-American landowners after the race riot. He was a part of the anti-Klan element in the Democratic Party, and that cost him his job a few times. But he also ran afoul of some of the WPA crowd, too, as well. What led to this enmity among people he was working with?
Cy was one of those people who really believed what he believed in, and he didn't take any prisoners. And I think today, especially when we see so many people kind of saying, well, okay, or not saying anything, I think Cy stepped up and said things that he thought were important to say.
When he was a county commissioner, he really led to a building of good roads in Tulsa, which Tulsa really boomed and couldn't keep up with the amount of people coming into Tulsa. So they had dirt roads, they had muddy roads. And this was one of his big things as a county commissioner, was he's building a road. He promoted the first government-backed Arkansas River Bridge at 11th Street. The bridge still stands. That was his doing as well.
Yeah. Well, I think at the time, one of the things I got fascinated with people's interest in roads at that time, because they couldn't, people like Cy would hold a good roads meeting, and hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, would show up. And then you start thinking about the roads of those days. And to go 10 miles was a real chore. And people would go 100 miles to come to some of these road meetings to get better roads. And the technology to build roads was really just brand new in those days. Probably not surprising, the first mile of concrete road, highway, was laid in Wayne County, Michigan, near Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I was part of a delegation that went up to look at it. And as soon as the technology was available, people started pushing for good roads. And the stories about the mud are unbelievable. I mean, I had a story out of Missouri that somebody said that as long as the mud didn't come up past the bottom of his stirrups, that it was an okay road.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, so if you had a car, I can see where you would just be in a frenzy to have better roads. And so I was one of the people that rolled up his sleeves and said, all right, he was going to make it happen.
My guest today is Susan Croce Kelly, a former journalist, author of Route 66, The Highway and Its People. Her follow-up book is titled Father of Route 66, The Story of Cy Avery. It's published by the University of Oklahoma Press, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I was really fascinated by that you refer to this era as do-it-yourself highways, where basically groups of these good road commissions would come in, and they would basically demand good roads and figure out how to get it done themselves, get the planning done. Cy's first group was, I think, the Ozarks Trail Association, which was building roads to western Arkansas and southwest Missouri. It was really interesting about these do-it-yourselfers. They were, you know, they were just groups of citizens, some very altruistic, others were about enriching themselves. And the question that comes up was, this was a frequent charge put to Cy Avery. Did you find evidence that he was really in it to enrich himself? I mean, we know about Avery Corner out at Admiral and Mingo, where he had the Old English Inn, the tourist court, and gas station. From what I read, you think it was more on the altruistic side?
I'm sure of it, because he said on more than one occasion, he said, you know, a person gets into politics and that just ruins them for making a living. Which is not kind of what we say today.
Right.
But he was so busy getting the things done that he thought were important that he did, I think, neglect his business from time to time. There was a letter from the other state highway commissioners when he was on the highway commission that commiserated about how being, you know, working on the highway commission had cost Cy far more than it had cost the other two. When you're in the real estate business, that's pretty hands-on.
Right.
And that was what he did most of the time to make a living.
Now, you did write a little bit about what he had where Route 66 did go by, the Old English Inn. He had a tourist court and a gas station that was there for a long time. Of course, this location now is the traffic circle.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that business on that far east side of the city.
Well, apparently the Old English Inn was quite a showplace, and people would motor out on Sundays to have fried chicken lunch and to get their car serviced, since there was a service station right there as well. And Cy's daughter-in-law talked about it. And she remembered, she, you know, wasn't part of the Avery family at the time, but she remembered as a child that it was a big adventure to go out and have lunch at the Old English Inn.
Hmm.
Another thing that was on that property, that was the corner of a farm that Cy had. And this speaks to how he managed to live among the oil barons. But Cy was always a farmer. He grew up on a farm from the time he was born. And as soon as he got to Tulsa, he bought property out where Mingo Circle is and established a farm. He had a farmhouse. And he used the farm for his social events. He would invite people out, and he would have a barbecue or another kind of a very casual event. And it was close enough to town that, you know, the city leaders would come. And oftentimes, Cy had a knack, a Tom Sawyer knack. He would get people to bring the food.
Well, as Route 66 began to take off, were there any threats to Oklahoma in having the routing go through Tulsa and Oklahoma City out west? I know there was a group in Kansas that wanted to go out the routing of the Santa Fe Trail.
Right. And, well, that's murky, too, because there was the old Santa Fe Trail and the new Santa Fe Trail. These, what I call the do-it-yourself highways, the good roads trails and good roads highways. As you said, the groups in the towns along the way would ante up to straighten out the road, keep the roads clean if not surfaced, and money for maps. And if you didn't give money for the map, you were left off the map. Kind of interesting. But I don't know of any opposition to routing Highway 66 to the west from Los Angeles to Oklahoma City and Tulsa. There was bad feelings in Kansas City, which was kind of the hub for the National Trails and the Santa Fe Trail, that the road that became Route 66 was a new road. Oklahoma was a new state, and that some of these other trails were much, much older, and that the people that designed the highway map should have taken notice and routed the highways that way. But as Cy said at one point in his colossal fight with the governor of Kentucky, he said, people don't go to Kentucky. They go this way on this road. And I think you've got that same issue when you're talking about the other ways west, was that the road to the south was a good one, and people were going to take it, whether it was numbered 66 or not.
All right. Well, of course, what he did after Route 66 was built through the Route 66 Association. That really led to some of the romance that would come along later when they really built up the image of Route 66 once the road was built.
They did. And when he and a fellow in Springfield, Missouri, organized the Route 66, the U.S. 66 Highway Association, I think was the official name, the charter papers talk about the Main Street of America, which I thought was Cy's term. He actually stole it from the Lincoln Highway. But the Lincoln Highway never managed to have the cachet that Route 66 did in terms of longevity and popularity and so forth. Cy was a promoter, and I think that's another thing he liked about Tulsa. I mean, Tulsa had this sense of promotion, and boy, Cy was right there. But the Route 66 Association, which was formed in January of 1927, right after the highway became Route 66, the first thing they did, a year after the Route 66 Association was formed, they staged a foot race, but not just any foot race. It started in Los Angeles, followed Route 66 to Chicago, then went east to New York, and ended in Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
Now, this is not a group that thinks small.
No, it's not.
And when I did my first book, Roaming Up and Down Route 66, we met people, the photographer and I, met people who said, they closed the schools. I was sitting right there when Route 66, when the Bunyan Derby came through. They called it the Bunyan Derby for the sports writers, nicknamed it the Bunyan Derby because that's a long way.
You know, I was just driving part of the old route this last weekend, and the one thing that I was struck by was every town you went through, you had to at least make one or sometimes two or three turns through a town. This was commercialism. This is about making sure you have the most, if the Main Street of America is going to go through your town, you want it to have the most frontage as possible.
That's right. And there was another thing that happened too, and that was just plain old politics. The road changed.
Yeah.
Sometimes it went one way, and then they would repave it, and it would go another way. And in one place, I don't think it was in Oklahoma, I learned that they had paved part of the road with brick because the lieutenant governor was in the brick business.
Well, this is the interesting thing that, Cy was always accused of that, but as far as you could see, he really didn't feather his own nest.
No. If he was trying, he did a very bad job. The Bureau of Public Roads looked into that during one of the time when he was accused of being a little too close to the Lock Joint Pipe Company, which was the company that made the big 5-foot pipes that Spavinaw Water went through, and also pipes for the culverts and so forth in the highway system. And I don't think Cy was ever ultimately found guilty of anything. After the second Spavinaw project, Lock Joint hired him, and he desperately needed the job and the money in order to get along. I mean, so, and apparently it worked out well for both sides. But he worked well into his 80s and then left only a few thousand dollars when he died.
Now, by the time he died, the era of Route 66, it probably, as he thought of it, was probably just about over, wasn't it?
Yes. He died in 1963, and the interstate system had been passed into law in 1956, and so they were beginning well into bypassing the old highway by then. Of course, that was 1963. There was a television show called Route 66 with a couple of guys in a Corvette.
That's right, George Maharis and Marty Milner.
Milner. That was one of the things that has made Route 66 an icon for yet another generation. I had something interesting happen to me maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I have a friend who's Japanese, and she called me and she said, I want a copy of your book. I said, okay. She said, my mother has a friend who's just written a book about Route 66, and I want to send your book to him, and I'll send you one of his books. And it's a beautiful photography book that Mr. Ozeki came to the United States. I think he's been here 4 times and driven up and down Route 66. And he asked me, when I met him, he said he was going to write another book and ask if I would write the introduction. So I sent off an introduction, and then I received this book in the mail that has my picture and, all the Japanese characters. So I assume that's what I wrote. But the interest in Route 66 outside the United States and the knowledge of the highway outside the United States is just phenomenal.
And
you live in Tulsa. Maybe you see people.
Sure, yeah. When you're traveling up and down the highway, you inevitably see people from abroad. What do you think it symbolizes about Americans?
I've been trying to figure that out because, you know, it's not a very good road. It never was a very good road, but I think, it goes to Hollywood and California, which is, I think, a big part of the lure of Route 66. But for people from Europe or Japan, everybody lives close together. You have highways and you have forests, but you don't have just public spaces. And you get out to Western Oklahoma, until you get close to Los Angeles, there's an awful lot of open space. And I don't think the rest of the world has open places like we do in the United States.
Hmm.
I think just the bigness of the country is reinforced by Route 66.
Susan Croce Kelly, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk about Psy.
Missouri writer Susan Croce Kelly speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her new book is titled Father of Route 66, The Story of Psy Avery. It's published by the University of Oklahoma Press. She'll be giving a lecture and book signing this Saturday at 10:30 at the Tulsa Historical Society Museum at 2445 South Peoria. The event's free and open to the public. Visit TulsaHistory.org for more information. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.